Good afternoon and welcome to the latest in the series of the Intelligent Idiot's Guide to a More Sustainable World. We're the programme that looks at environmental issues and debates within climate change and explores ideas on how each of us can apply those concepts in our own lives. As usual, you have Chetan, our sustainability expert, and Hannah, our resident social scientist.
Hey everyone.
Hello, and of course you, Linda.
And me, Linda Bird. Today we're looking at the hot topic of donut economics, an economics model which has been designed to help us find a safe and just space for humanity to live within the Earth's resources.
So where did this economic model come from then, Linda?
It's the brainchild of Oxford academic and economist Kate Raworth, who first developed the idea in 2012 when she was working for Oxfam. Her design became a Sunday Times bestseller in 2017 called Donut Economics, How to Think Like a 21st Century Economist. The donut economics framework itself is now used globally.
So today then, our aim is to explain what donut economics actually is, why it evolved, and look at the role it plays on the sustainability stage. We'll be assessing how it contributes to the way we examine climate change and human well-being, and we're also going to be asking how can we apply it to our own lives.
So later in the programme, Hannah, you'll be looking at how donut economics is used in real-world scenarios, getting to the nitty-gritty of what it means for us all.
And I'll be taking your questions again in our usual over-to-you slot later in the show.
So let's get started. Donut economics, what's it all about? It's a catchy name, sounds a bit like a posh way of budgeting for tea time pastries, but it's actually a revolutionary tool. It's a conceptual framework, if you like, of assessing how the world's population, which according to UN figures currently stands at 7.8 billion, can live, how it can actually thrive within the Earth's finite and ever-dwindling resources.
We know what a fine balancing act that is, particularly with a population that may reach, according to the UN, to 9.8 billion by 2050.
So Kate Raworth argues in her book that this is because we've been focused on an upward curve of economic growth. Hannah, tell us more.
Yeah, sure. So just bear with me while I give you a crash course in economics.
Oh, no.
Don't panic. This is just to provide some context for our listeners. Otherwise, it can be hard to understand why the idea of a donut economics has actually come about. So gross domestic product, what we call GDP, is a key indicator of development and growth. A lot of academics agree, basically, we determine whether or not a country is doing well by looking at their economic activity, their GDP.
And a particularly important one is Walt Rostow's five stages of growth.
Yeah, so Rostow's last stage of growth is the age of mass consumption, which is when consumer demands, so all of us wanting to buy lots of lovely things all the time, is fed by production on those things on a mass scale. And these ideas about how our economies should work in this way are very much tied up in things like capitalism and having a linear economy.
Rostow's model echoed the ideas of key historical economists such as Adam Smith, who is often considered, though I acknowledge there is some debate, the father of capitalism.
So the linear economy being just what it sounds?
Yeah, it's the one that grows in an upward trend.
Yeah, it's that upward curve graph that characterizes traditional economics, which has been absorbed into the global consciousness. Grow, 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 make more money, accumulate more and more wealth, buy lots of stuff. That's the message we get.
Yeah, exactly. And to be honest, as academics such as Robert Costanza and others point out, GDP was quite a useful path to a better world in some senses when it was discussed after World War II.
But there's been this growing realisation of climate change and the pressure that our growth has put on the world, which is why there's lots of talk nowadays about moving away from linear economies towards alternative ideas, which is where Kate Raworth comes in.
Exactly. Enter Kate with her alternative idea. In fact, governments are calling for different ways of looking at this. For example, back in 2010, the European Union published their Europe 2020 strategy, which did include calls for a different kind of economic model.
So basically we realise that when we look at the world we live in today, it's clear that governments have prioritised GDP over crucial human rights issues of poverty and social justice, well-being and the health of the planet.
It's not a great picture, is it?
No. Some scientists, for example Patrick Keyes and others, are even proposing that because humans have become this kind of dominant force for change on the planet, we've actually entered a new geological time period.
Ooh, and they're calling it the Anthropocene.
Indeed.
So there's lots for us to think about.
Bear in mind, for example, the Oxfam and the Stockholm Environment Institute report that 10% of the Earth's population are responsible for half of global emissions.
And also consider the findings of Brookings in 2013 for a minute, that 57% of global income is owned by 10% of the global population.
So, 8 years ago, when Kate Raworth first sat down in 2012, ahead of the UN Conference on Sustainable Development, to design a picture of sustainable prosperity. She said she got her pencil out and went back to the drawing board, redesigning a whole new economics visual.
Instead of that upward curve of growth, she envisaged something altogether more holistic, in which the interdependence between the humanity and the earth was clear, and which factored in the limits of the earth's resources and the fundamental human rights of every person on the globe. So Linda, what does it look like?
Okay, so due to our podcast formula, you'll need to close your eyes and imagine a big ring donut. The lovely doughy squidgy bit is the sweet spot. That's the safe place between which we can dwell without putting either the planet's resources or our human well-being into jeopardy. It's the place we all want to be. The outer layer of the donut is based on what experts call planetary boundaries, the ecological ceiling, or the outer ring of the globe, beyond which we, as humanity, mustn't, cannot veer. Think of it as our Earth safety fence.
Kate has based these planetary boundaries on research led by Johan Rockström from the Stockholm Resilience Centre and Will Stefan from the Australian National University.
That's right. I know planetary boundaries may be a totally new word for many people listening, but these are things such as biodiversity and freshwater use. Basically, things are important for a healthy planet.
Yeah, Linda, but globally, many of these boundaries have already been exceeded.
That's true. Okay, so who is still thinking about the donut shape?
I am. I mean, to be honest, it's making me want a donut.
Yeah, me too. When we finish talking about all this detail, can we actually eat some donuts?
Yes, we can. But first, we need to add in something rather different to this donut.
Ah, yes. This is the point where Kate has used the concept of planetary boundaries, but actually added a human element, and in doing so, creates an entirely different model.
That's right. So close your eyes again. Now turn your attention to the inner ring of our donut. This is the boundary that Kate Raworth describes as social foundation, so it depicts elements we need to live for development and dignity. It includes things like education and gender equality and housing and political voice.
These social indicators are based on the internationally agreed minimum standards for human beings established by the UN Sustainable Development Goals.
Yeah, that's right. But according to Oxfam and the UN, millions of people experience a shortfall in these basic needs.
But the genius of the donut that it shows us where we've overshot the boundaries and where the shortfalls are. So it kind of acts as a sort of compass to assess that state of human well-being and how far the planet's being stretched to its limit.
And it provides a visual way that could help address this ultimate existential conundrum. How can we feed, clothe, educate, house everyone while maintaining their human rights, not using up the planet's resources and pushing ourselves out of the safe zones?
That's true. And the idea is you bring the model into your boardroom or policy-making meetings or your own life, and with just a few tweaks to make it relevant to you, you build a framework that achieves that just and safe space. So there's plenty of food for thought here, and I definitely fancy a donut now. So let's hand over to Hannah to take us further into the donut.
Thanks, Linda. And let's think now about how donut economics is relevant to us.
Yes, because Kate's really focused on applying the theory, isn't she?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The economic model is absolutely one that can be applied, and what's really interesting about it is that it can be scaled up and down. So you can lead a very donut life as an individual person.
Oh, I like that, a donut life.
Yeah, me too. So yeah, you can live a donut life, but you can also be a donut company or organisation, or more widely, this global concept can be adopted by towns and cities. It can even be scaled to a national level and used by governments.
And Kate's developed a really useful website too, hasn't she? DonutEconomics.org.
That's right. She calls it the Action Lab. It's all about recognizing these ideas and turning them into action. And in fact, some places have done this already, like South Africa, Amsterdam, Scotland, Wales, and even Cornwall. All these places have created donuts and used it to inform their decision making.
So this means that those places have sat down and thought about which environmental and social indicators are important for their specific place in order to understand whether or not they've overshot the boundaries or fallen below the social floor.
That's right. And creating a donut provides a visual for where you need to improve. For example, the Cornwall Council have a decision making wheel which allows the council to assess any upcoming initiative or project while keeping in mind its own environmental and social considerations.
If you want more information, there's a report out there called The State of the Donut in Cornwall, which was co-authored in 2020 by the University of Exeter and Cornwall Council.
That sounds really useful. So we're a consumer podcast based in the UK, so how does donut economics relate to us?
So in 2015, some clever people, Dr. Catherine Turek and Malcolm Sayers, both from Oxfam, actually published the UK Donut.
And what messages stand out from the UK donut?
Well, put very simply, the UK isn't doing too well. The report states that the UK significantly pushes beyond the majority of the environmental boundaries, and at the same time it drops below the social floor within the model, which means there's deprivation and inequality in the UK.
It's probably important to say that the report is about the UK, and therefore the donut has been adapted specifically for the UK. So the social indicators were chosen to reflect people's priorities for what's important in the UK. For example, things like internet connectivity and sense of support.
Okay, so let's look at the environmental indicators now. Now these aren't great. The UK seems to have broken out of the donut in 8 of these.
And according to the report, 55% of birds, specifically farmland birds, species have declined in the UK since the 1970s. And another stat for fish eaters listening, the report found that in 2012, 64% of the UK fish were being harvested unsustainably.
Interesting that I checked for an update about that, and the UK government have been doing things behind the scenes to address this. They also released data in October 2020 that shows an overall improvement. So in 2018, it had dropped to 50% being harvested unsustainably. Still not great though. Another environmental factor which has breached in the UK donut is climate change. And for this, they measure carbon emissions, and basically, we emit too many.
This all chimes, doesn't it, with other sources, such as the UK's Committee on Climate Change, who tracks our emissions. It's the same message again. We need to act now on climate change.
There are definitely things we can do. Hannah, how can our listeners downscale the donut economics model and actually translate this into action in their everyday lives?
Kate started to answer this question during her TEDx talk in Athens in 2014. She said then that we need to start thinking about how the daily decisions and choices we make put us inside the ring of the donut, into that safe and just space for humanity, as she calls it.
So in other words, I think what we're saying is it's about pulling ourselves away from being primarily focused on growth and consumption and money, and actually towards choices in our daily lives that centre on human well-being and on living within our means of the planet.
Yeah, so think about your water use, your individual carbon emissions, so how often do you use your car? How much meat do you eat? If you do those things less, you generate less emissions.
So recycle and use less plastic, use eco-friendly cleaning products?
Yeah, think about your household decisions. Can you switch your energy supplier to a 100% renewable one?
Actually, I think lots of these ideas are already known by people who want to live environmentally friendly lives. It's all about living within your means.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. And in fact, that is probably a downfall of the model. You have to translate it into action to make it meaningful, and that takes work. And often we know the things that we need to do to be more environmentally friendly, but we can fall into the gap that clever people call the value action gap. Basically, when our values and our actions don't align.
Yeah, but what I like about the donut economics model, and what makes it different for me, is that compared to just being focused on environmental sustainability, it brings into light the human element. So while you're thinking about living in the donut, you also need to think about how you can avoid dropping down below the social floor.
That's an incredibly important point. So Hannah, how can we do this at the individual level?
So think about how you can drive change to improve the UK donut.
This might be by volunteering or giving to charity.
Yeah. Who do you bank with? Can you bank with a more ethical or environmentally friendly bank?
Can you get involved with your local community?
Be aware of how you vote. Think about what is important to improving that donut and use your voting power wisely.
And also look after yourself and others. And one of the indicators within the UK donut was about having a sense of support. And it reported that 10% of the people felt that they had little to no support in times of need. That's 1 in 10 people.
Not great. Okay, so we are now ready for our live Q&A session. Lines are open.
First question, Grace has emailed us from Leeds. Grace is a mother of three and asks, could this model help shape the post-COVID world?
That's a good question, Grace. The donut incorporated into the post-COVID world would help put nations on track for economic and social recovery.
Yeah, and it strikes me this is probably because it focuses not just on environmental conservation, but on social welfare and economic growth. And I've read the model is already being incorporated in the Netherlands.
Indeed it has. Amsterdam has adopted the donut model, and in April 2020, Kate Weber joined the city's post-pandemic economic planning efforts. Amsterdam is looking to change the economics perspective. The deputy mayor of Amsterdam, Marieke van Duurnik, talked of plans to reduce the consumption of new materials by 50% in the next decade. If you want to find out more about this, we've got our information from The Guardian.
Okay, so on to the next. We've been messaged by Connor on Instagram, who asks, as a business owner, how can I incorporate this into my business model?
Another great question. Thanks, Connor.
So if you're running a small business, you can often be confronted with the challenge of balancing ecological and social issues on one side and the need to make profit and have a good cost efficiency on the other.
Some practical things Connor could do in his business include thinking about reducing the energy consumption of the business.
So could he be more energy efficient in terms of production?
Yeah. He may also want to think about obtaining his raw materials from sustainable resources.
He could also think about training his employees. You know, things like saving water and turning the lights off. Maybe engaging with charities, perhaps his local community. Or having his offices and building run with a focus on the environment and human well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. Having a transparent and just pay distribution between employees and management. Equal pay for men and women. He could also think about making sure he was using socially and ecologically responsible supply chains.
Hope that helps, Connor.
Okay, so the third question comes in from Emma on Facebook. Emma asks, it sounds more like a social and environmental model. So why is it called donut economics then?
Thanks for the question, Emma. So the donut framework lays out the parameters for a sustainable economy. This is because the environmental activities are directly impacted, for better or worse, by our economic activities, and so is our social well-being. And so the model overall is an economic model more than anything.
Okay, now we have a caller. Reese should be on the line. Hello.
Hello, I've been listening to your live podcast from sunny South Wales. I'm in Cardiff.
Oh, Wales, a lovely part of the UK. Go ahead, Reese. What's your question?
I've just been wondering, you talked a lot about what's great with this donut model, but what is bad? Or is it totally perfect?
That's a good question. It's not totally perfect because there needs to be a lot of work to translate the model into action. The model doesn't tell you how to resolve the problems it highlights.
I suppose it's not useful unless it's been translated into something tangible, so you have to do the work locally for it to make sense. And the global model also brings on a lot of different factors into discussion, and kind of subjective interpretation. I mean, we talk about this safe and just space, but it's safe and just for whom?
Yeah, and particularly with the environmental factors, often these are interlinked and overlap. There can be feedbacks between them. I'm not sure the model really gets to grip with the interplay.
Yeah, and on the social side, I don't think it really considers the other elements that can be at play, politics, for example, that are really significant. Some things are easier to fix in society than others.
And some things are getting fixed, and there might be a lot of work going on, but the model doesn't indicate progress. You mentioned earlier, Hannah, when you talked about sustainable fishing.
Mm.
Some of the developing countries are focused on economic development, and is this model really enticing for them? I also think that planetary boundaries bring their own critiques, because every part of the world has different issues and the model doesn't tell us what exactly the tipping points are and if these changes can be reversed.
Hey, I'm not sure any model is going to be perfect.
True. Reese, thank you so much for the question. Have we answered it?
Yes, thank you. I guess, as Hannah just said, it can't be perfect, but it's an interesting debate to have.
Thanks, Reese, for getting in touch.
Thank you. Ta-ra.
Okay, so we're nearly at the end of the show, guys. What do we all think about it? Is it a good model to help global sustainability?
Personally, I think it's great because it highlights where we're going wrong. I think we do urgently need to become a more sustainable world, but perhaps we should all just choose one alternative economic model. I'm a secret circular economy fan, actually.
For me, it really provides a good visual that can be shared very easily and understood pretty quickly by people all over the world. But I do wonder how many countries or places might actually put this into action.
Do you know, for me, the holistic Earth-human link sounds groundbreaking. And on a personal level, it gives me, and hopefully our listeners, some really good ideas on how to assess the impact of our lifestyle decisions. And to small business owners, a useful compass to operate more sustainably.
Well, I think that's all we've got time for. I hope everyone listening is feeling more informed about donut economics and how it can be relevant to them.
Thanks, everyone. Can we have a donut now?
Yes, we can. So do join us next week when we'll be discussing another economic model, the circular economy. And don't forget, you can get all of our previous episodes on our very own app, including last week's programme on green investment. Thank you for listening.